welcome to the Crypto Sky Podcast. Today we have another amazing episode. I recently conducted an interview with Jameson Lopp. Many of you are familiar with him, but if you are not, he is a major figure in the crypto space and is currently working with Casa as an engineer. I met Jameson at Crypto Lana, where I heard him speak on security, and when he mentioned he would be down to do an interview, I was really excited. I'm glad I was able to have him on, and we covered some more technical aspects, including the Lightning Network and Bitcoin scalability issue. We also talked some about what money and Bitcoin actually mean to Jameson and the differences between the two. I really hope you enjoy this interview, and before we get to it, I would like to officially announce my first sponsor for the podcast. Honeyminer is a simple solution for those interested in getting into crypto mining but don't know where to start. You simply go to their website, honeyminer.com, sign up with your email, download the app, and start mining. Honeyminer is completely free and lets you rank up as you gain experience points and continue to mine. It's a really simple way to get into mining and see if it's for you. You're able to mine with both a CPU and GPU, and for those of you who are looking to diversify or experimenting with passive income, Honeyminer is definitely worth checking out. The app is currently available for Windows only, but Mac will be available soon. This is a paid sponsorship, but I know both of the founders who work very hard, and I've been using Honeyminer app for a couple of weeks now, and I absolutely love it. I highly recommend signing up, and if you want to earn some free Satoshis when you sign up, use my referral link in the show notes below. Now, without any farther ado, let's get into the interview. Hello, Jameson. I just want to say thank you for coming on the Crypto Sky Podcast and welcome you.
It's great to be here.
All right, so talk a little bit about how you got into crypto and then kind of what your background was beforehand.
Well, I was a computer science major at UNC Chapel Hill and was just working in the web application development for a number of years. And at some point in time, I ran across a Slashdot article about Bitcoin, and that then turned into a multi-year type of process before I really decided to go full-time and switch my career.
Okay. So what was kind of one thing that really captured you in the crypto space?
There were two things I would say, and it was both just the philosophy and ideology that was being perpetuated here, and then of course there was also the technical side of things, which really piqued my computer science interests. For a number of reasons, I thought that this type of system was just going to get hacked and everybody was going to end up in tears and sorry that they were even trying to use it in the first place. But over time, I realized that the system was not going away and I probably had missed something interesting.
So what is a cypherpunk to someone who's not really familiar with that term? And then kind of how do you align with that ideology?
It's a pretty broad thing. It's generally anyone who is interested in privacy and perpetuating stronger privacy via the use of technologies, and that's especially via the use of cryptography. So this is anyone who thinks that those type of technologies gaining greater adoption will result in social change.
Okay. So kind of go into detail about what the Silk Road was and then kind of how it played a role in the development of Bitcoin.
Well, it was a darknet market, really the first of its kind where you could actually exchange all kinds of illegal goods because we finally had this censorship resistant type of money, this cryptocurrency. And it was one of the first businesses of its kind, but it became a huge successful business. I don't even know how many hundreds of millions or billions of dollars worth of goods were transacted through it, but it really helped to bootstrap Bitcoin because it showed that it's enabled a new type of economic interaction. And then I think it also showed that it's actually possible to engage in these types of shady transactions in a way that is safer than usual for most people, since you're no longer having to physically meet with people that you probably don't trust.
Yeah, definitely. So to someone who's really unfamiliar with kind of the tech behind crypto, just go into detail a little bit about what blockchain is and what it's actually doing.
So at a very high level, blockchain is just a data structure. It's a way of storing data where you are putting the data together in batches, which are called blocks, and then you're using a cryptographic hash function to create a fingerprint of each block. And that fingerprint also includes a reference to the block before it, which as a result is what really chains them together from a cryptographic standpoint. And what this does is it gives you some tamper evident properties, so such that like if anyone tried to go back in history in the blockchain and change a single piece of data, then it would break that cryptographic chain of hashes. And it would be very easy for someone to then automatically check and see that there had been some sort of tampering. And so that is one of the building blocks of Bitcoin, just the data structure. And then there's a number of other things that make Bitcoin work as well as it does, especially around the mining and then the network of nodes and how they propagate the data. And so it was really Satoshi Nakamoto bringing all of these different building blocks together to create a unique system that people had been trying to build for decades.
Yeah. And something that I've kind of found really interesting while getting into this space is how important Bitcoin is to people. It's more than just a currency. It's more than just an asset. It really means something to them. Kind of touch on that.
Well, that's kind of getting towards the ideological aspect of it. This was actually another reason why I got involved early on. Okay. Is that it's just the idea of money being this concept that I believe belongs to humanity in general. And as such, it seems to make a lot of sense for concepts like that to be open collaborative projects. So I thought it was really cool that, you know, we're trying to create this optimal form of money that is available for anyone to give their input into as to like how they want to see it evolve.
So kind of touch on how important privacy is to you personally.
Well, it's become a lot more important over the past few years as I've had a lot more people paying attention to me.
Yeah.
And in fact, after an incident that I had last year where the police and SWAT team showed up at my house, I have actually spent quite a few resources trying to improve my real world privacy. And it's been a very long road. Very educational experience, and I'll be posting details about like all the things that I've learned over this year.
Yeah, definitely. So do you actually believe people are ready to fully control their privacy and currency? It's something I mentioned with Desiree, and it's something that I've kind of been thinking about. I'm not really sure if people are. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's this counterbalance between having like self-sovereignty and having personal responsibility, where in order to, you know, take on more power for yourself, you are also taking on additional responsibility. And so I think there's a reason why we have evolved the structure of our society the way that it has gone, where we basically centralize a lot of aspects of our lives around specialists because it's the most efficient way to get things done. So, you know, we don't have to know how to do everything. We just do a few specific things and we're really good at them. And then we rely upon other people to do their specific things. But this results in, you know, creating stuff like bank structures where you have specialists that are just doing the security around your money and other assets. And so when we talk about, you know, Bitcoin giving people the ability to be their own bank, that has always been true, but it's never been particularly easy. And that's why I've spent the past 3+ years still just working on very low level key management problems.
Okay.
While, you know, there's a lot of people who are doing really mind bending stuff, trying to push the envelope. I'm still personally just sticking to really simple stuff because I think that we haven't quite got to the point where it's easy enough for people to secure their own private data. So I guess the short version is no, I don't think that people are ready yet, but I don't think the technology is quite ready for the people yet. And so that's why I'm building it.
Yeah, definitely. So, what does money actually mean to you? I know, most people see it as a dollar bill, something else. What does it mean to you?
To me, it is actually stored time.
Okay.
I see it as, you're when you're providing value to someone, this is kind of going back to the specialization stuff. You're basically saving someone a lot of time when you're a specialist and you're providing a service because you can do it a lot more efficiently than them. And so I kind of see a lot of these transfers of value as actually, people creating and storing time and then, passing this sort of liquid time around in order to spend their own time however they want to.
So, on the other hand, do you see Bitcoin as being the same as money or maybe something totally different?
Yeah, well, so it's tricky because when people talk about like what is money, you usually have these few standard things of store of value, medium of exchange, and unit of account. And right now, Bitcoin's still very young, and it seems to be doing all right on the store of value side, but we still have a long ways to go on the medium of exchange side and even further to go on the unit of account side. So there's a strong argument to be made that Bitcoin is not money yet, though people are certainly using it as a monetary instrument in a number of different ways.
Yeah, so who do you see Bitcoin's intended audience being? Do you see it being the financial elite? Or do you see it being everyone? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, ultimately, everyone, because one of, I think, the most important aspects of this system is that we are trying to like wrest the control of the financial system away from just a few elite parties.
So, what are some steps that Bitcoin needs to actually take to become a currency? I know this is something you just mentioned. What are some actual steps Bitcoin needs to take?
Just need to become a lot more scalable from a technical standpoint, and we also need to work on the usability of the product so that the average person can actually just pick it up and use it. It basically needs to be as simple as your Facebook or Snapchat or Twitter or whatever other apps, and so that's one of the things I think that we're still struggling to find the right trade-offs of this like security versus usability. And I think that we're making some pretty good steps at Casa, which is my current startup.
So, do you see another coin like maybe a lightning net, a lightning, excuse me, a Litecoin or something of that sort being more of a currency, or do you see Bitcoin kind of molding and adopting that role?
I suspect that over the long run, we're going to see interoperability
Okay.
between a lot of these networks continue to increase, especially as second layer networks like Lightning Network come out.
Okay.
And so it may end up being that crypto in general becomes more of a homogeneous thing where it's like everything is Bitcoin because even if you have Bitcoin and you want to pay somebody else in Litecoin because they only accept Litecoin. I expect that there will eventually be a very simple way in your wallets to actually make that transaction in a fast and trustless fashion.
Okay. And this is something you mentioned. Just kind of explain what Lightning Network is and the process behind it.
Yeah, it's extremely complicated from a technical standpoint. But suffice to say that you're using cryptography and aspects of these main blockchain networks like Bitcoin and Lightning or Litecoin and whatnot. And you are basically anchoring into those blockchains to open up a direct connection with somebody else on the network. And this is like establishing a channel with some value in the channel. And you can then update the balance of that channel and basically push the value back and forth between the different people who have connected. And this becomes a lot more interesting when you then realize that you can network a bunch of people together and just have them pushing value around. And so this is kind of the idea of like how to build a high speed routed second layer network on top of a blockchain that is a lot more private, a lot more scalable. And it's really same type of architecture that we saw the internet itself get built through. So if anyone goes and looks at like the OSI model for the 7-layer stack that comprises the internet itself, you'll see that similar type of layering approach is actually what allowed the internet to scale as well.
So what are some of the problems Lightning Network is facing, and then kind of how far away do you see it being from actually being truly usable, you know, everyday use case?
Well, it was only a few months ago that the three main implementations actually got all in sync with each other so that they could generally talk to each other. And so now the main thing is trying to work out a lot of reliability issues and you know, finding the various edge cases that could cause your payments not to get routed or your node to have to like close channels. And it's just, you know, figuring out all the nitty-gritty stuff under the hood so that ultimately people shouldn't really have to be worrying about any of that. So I would expect, you know, it's probably going to be at least another year or so before it becomes robust enough that you see mass adoption of people using the Lightning Network to make payments.
Okay. And do you see that the Lightning Network having security issues where the transactions are quicker, or do you think that will be figured out as well?
So the Lightning, any second layer network really can't have better security than the layer under it. You are going to be making some trade-offs, but the scalability improvement is, I think, going to be worth it. And also, a lot of the issue of like building out this network is just that nothing like this in particular has ever been done before. And there's a lot of questions around like how the capital formation needs to happen and how you'll manage different liquidity issues, moving money around the network. And so it's going to be a trial and error learning experience for sure.
Yeah. And this is something you talked a bit about with Peter. You know, I see it being more of like a hot wallet, you know, something you mentioned where people maybe store a little bit less Bitcoin than they have to where they can move it around easily and then they still have their cold storage wallets and, you know, that sort of setup.
Definitely.
So to someone who's not familiar, explain what a Bitcoin node is and then how someone can run one and kind of why they would want to.
Sure. So this is how you actually get the strongest security and strongest privacy properties while using Bitcoin, because there are many different ways that you can use Bitcoin, different types of wallet software and whatnot. But by running a full node, you are validating the entire history of the blockchain and as a result, not trusting that anyone is being honest to you because you've checked everything yourself. And you also get better privacy from this because whenever you're using like a website-based wallet or a lightweight mobile wallet, those are actually going out and querying for specific addresses and can very easily create privacy leaks, and people can like figure out basically which Bitcoins you own. When you are running a full node, you're downloading everything and checking it locally, so there's no one out there who sees that you're only interested in specific data. But then, you know, this gets into a lot of other like philosophical aspects of like the governance of these protocols and whatnot. And really, when you are choosing the rules that you are enforcing yourself, that is what gives you the most autonomy in these systems.
So do you see, you know, the proof of work algorithm maybe having advantages over proof of stake long term, or do you see it being a disadvantage? And what are your thoughts?
There's definitely pros and cons. You can definitely make like efficiency arguments and say that proof of stake doesn't cost as much to the environment or whatever. But proof of work, I think, is better because you're using resources external to the system in order to secure it. Whereas with proof of stake, you're using the system itself to secure itself. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Also, it creates, I think, proof of stake can create problems with the fairness or egalitarian aspects of securing the system because, you know, once you're in there and you have a certain percentage of ownership, then the only other way for someone to compete with you is for them to actually essentially pay you by, you know, buying more of those tokens and inflating the value. Whereas when with proof of work, they just need to go out and buy a bunch of electricity and they can start competing with you.
Yeah. So how do you see Bitcoin scaling, you know, outside of Lightning Network, which we talked about a bit? How do you see it scaling?
Well, there's going to be a whole lot of different software and experiments that happen. And so we've seen one of these things, of course, is sidechains, where Blockstream is rolling out their liquid network, basically for exchanges to conduct faster transfers between each other. And also we're seeing more things like Tumblebit and Zero Link and like new types of wallet and mixer projects that are coming along. And, you know, over time, I expect that, you know, we're going to see services popping up to basically help people improve their privacy and scalability with all kinds of different technologies. So while Lightning Network gets talked about the most, it is not by any means like the only interesting development that's happening in the system.
So do you see third-party chains being successful, you know, in scaling Bitcoin?
You mean like the private permissions chains or
yeah, that sort of, you know, off-chain scaling solutions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's going to be such a huge diversity of different blockchains and software and, you know, different levels of privacy and permissions. You know, a lot of them are just going to find their own niches and sure, I mean, a number of them will probably be in the financial technology space, but more on the like traditional banker side of things. But that's part of the great thing of, you know, open permissionless technology is everybody's just going to keep building and the market will figure out like which products fit in which sector is the best.
Yeah, definitely. So do you personally believe lower fees or quicker transactions are more important for Bitcoin's long-term success?
Yes. Well, so if we're talking about long-term success, then we want to get all those aspects of money. And of course, the medium of exchange is an important one of those. So I think that it will be important in order to actually go mainstream for people to be able to transact with each other in a fast, cheap fashion. I mean, we want it to be as cash-like as possible.
So compare some of the pros and cons of decentralization versus centralization. I know it's something we touched on earlier. You know, just kind of talk a little bit more about that.
Well, generally, more centralized is going to be more efficient to do things, you know, more performant. But you're going to be making trade-offs and usually like creating single points of failure. So it is generally, I would say, like less robust against extreme types of attacks or failure scenarios. Whereas with the decentralization, you're generally creating a more robust, like anti-fragile system where, sure, like some pieces of the system might get hurt or die off or, you know, get shocked by some sort of event. But if they're sufficiently distributed, there will always be some that survive and then, you know, re-coalesce to become stronger than they were before.
Yeah. So do you see one side having an advantage when it comes to actual cryptocurrency, you know, whether having a head man, you know, like Litecoin, you know, Tron, or do you see, you know, more of a decentralized like Monero or Bitcoin where they don't really have a head man?
It seems to be important to have someone in the lead, at least in the early stages of a project. Okay. Otherwise, you know, it could be very hard for that project to like, create its own identity and, you know, be able to have like a roadmap for the future. But over the long term, it also seems important that there not be a leader, because otherwise that person becomes a single point of failure if something terrible happens. And they get blamed for everything.
Yeah, that's another thing to look out for. Do you see decentralized exchanges being a good thing for the space and then ultimately being successful?
I definitely want to see them become successful, because it's once again, like going back to the single point of failure issue, is that like when we have one of these huge exchanges gets hacked, then it creates a shock that hurts the entire system. Whereas if we were only using decentralized exchanges, then it would be more distributed, where sure, like individual people would get hacked every now and then, but you wouldn't have a shock that has, you know, like hundreds of thousands of Bitcoins getting stolen and creating panic in the markets.
And this is something I actually didn't have written down, but I wanted to ask you, what do you think, you know, what are your thoughts on the media presenting Bitcoin, you know, either in a very negative light or a very positive light? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they're going to sell whatever is the most like outrageous thing that they can sell. They're just trying to get eyeballs. And so it's just funny to catalog the more extreme things, especially the folks that are like very almost transparent about, they're basically just like shilling the bags that they own and trying to get other people to buy them.
Do you think there has to be kind of more credible sources in the crypto space that are presenting information, or do you think it'll grow and the more traditional media sources will kind of learn and get it right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll get it right eventually. It's just kind of like looking back at the 90s and seeing those TV shows where the news anchors are like, what is internet? And, you know, how does this at symbol email thing work? And yeah, I mean, they'll catch up eventually. But that just the fact that like there's no real authority in this system means that you can't really have like official sources of information. And that has been one of the interesting things, is seeing like a lot of the disinformation campaigns that go on in the space.
So how do you compare Bitcoin and then blockchain as a whole to kind of the internet when it was first starting out? Do you think it's very similar? Do you think there are differences? You know, what are your thoughts?
No, I think there's a lot of similarities, you know, widely misunderstood. Going to see a lot of misapplications of technology, also just a lot of experimentation. And so that's why I think people are often making the comparisons to the early 90s or even late 80s of saying, well, yeah, I mean, this is very interesting new network that we're starting to build, but the infrastructure has barely even begun to be built out. And so very early days, very hard to actually use, but there's a lot of promise in the fundamental technology.
Yeah. And you mentioned it being difficult to use. You know, what are some of the obstacles the masses are facing when they're trying to get into crypto?
It's just a very different system. So the one of the biggest differences, of course, just being around personal responsibility, is that, you know, now you literally own your money. You don't have just some IOUs in a bank account. And so if you screw up, you're done. There's no one who can help you. So, you know, the learning curve is a lot higher and it's a lot less forgiving to get into the system. And so that's why I tell people to invest in education before they invest actual money into it, because otherwise they could easily end up losing their money.
So, and this is something you mentioned earlier as well, you're working with Casa. Just kind of touch on what Casa is and then kind of what your role is with them.
Well, it's our first service is basically a 3 of 5 multi-sig vault product, where the idea is that we're trying to merge the usability of a mobile phone app with the security properties that you get from these hardware key signing devices. And so the idea being that you're going to create a wallet and then have 3 different hardware devices distributed around. And in order to spend, you're going to have to go, you know, to multiple locations and get enough, signatures from these hardware devices before you have a fully valid transaction that can be broadcast out on the network. So not your everyday wallet, but it's for like high net worth individuals who really are interested in being their own bank.
So what are some things people need to focus on as far as keeping their crypto assets secure?
Well, the main thing is to make sure that the hackers can't steal your private keys, and also that you can't lose your private keys. And something that I've actually been talking about a lot recently is that it seems like people lose their data more often than their Bitcoins or other assets get stolen from them. So I actually think that it mostly comes down to boring old like IT practices of making sure that you have backups and off-site redundant storage type of stuff. And this is one of the reasons that I think that we've still got a long ways to go, is because we can't really expect people to necessarily maintain good IT practices.
So do you personally see Bitcoin, you know, always holding the top spot, always being the biggest cryptocurrency?
I think there's a pretty good chance of that for the foreseeable future. Now, I mean, nothing lasts forever, and there may be something comes along that's an order of magnitude better and manages to get a much greater network effect built around it. But from what I can tell, it just seems like a lot of the resources and development is happening in Bitcoin, and you know, it's managing to keep a pretty good lead because of that.
Yeah. So, and this is something I've kind of been thinking about recently. Do you see the possibility of maybe blockchain technology succeeding, but cryptocurrencies failing? You know, blockchain within, you know, IBM, you know, different business solutions, but all the currencies that we're used to, you know, ultimately failing.
I don't know. It seems hard because it seems kind of analogous to saying, like, back in the 80s, well, do you think that all these, like, bank-to-bank intranets will succeed, but the internet will fail? Seems to be a similar type of issue.
Okay. So what are some things you enjoy outside of crypto?
Lots of nerdy stuff. I haven't done much gaming for a while. But I'm very interested in virtual reality and planning on getting a VR rig set up. I don't watch sports, but I sometimes play sports. I'm good at most of the racket-based stuff. And I'm also a fan of, like, fast cars and motorcycles. So I've done a few track days, which have been pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So where do you personally want to be in 5 to 10 years? Do you still want to be at Casa? Do you still want to be at Bitcoin? Do you maybe want to be retired on an island?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say because it moves so fast in this space. But, you know, long term, I've been kind of moving away from doing a lot of day-to-day programming stuff.
Okay.
And I'm just doing more high-level outreach and in general, like, trying to understand what's going on in these systems. So I want to do whatever I can to continue to help build these systems out and get greater adoption.
Okay. So that's all the questions I have for you. I'll let you kind of wrap things up and give us your closing thoughts.
Yeah, well, I think, like, one of the reasons I end up doing a lot of presentations and talking a lot of podcasts is because this is a pretty complex and fast-moving space, and people are just trying to keep up and figure out what's going on. But one of my main concepts that I'm trying to get across to people is that you know, nobody fully understands what's going on in this space. We're all just, you know, trying to figure it out as we're going along. But, you know, if we can work together, then I think that's going to be the most important thing, is just for everybody to collaborate and not get too frustrated, because it is going to be a confusing space for the foreseeable future.
That's all for the interview. As always, thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this interview and learned something from Jameson. I have more amazing guests coming on in the following weeks, so I hope you will tune back in. If you would like to support the show, please remember to share it via social media. And if you are listening via iTunes, subscribe and leave a positive review. That's all for the episode, and I'll catch you next week.